in mitigation effects not as affected as stated. Additionally, KiwiRail reports assessments, and assessments fail to note that not only is there significant change to the environment noise levels, this noise will be continuous. Construction is expected to be 2 to 3 years, Monday to Saturday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Operations are intended to be 24/7, using heavier engines and longer trains, which all have the potential to exacerbate both noise and vibration issues. This is a significant change to our environment and will have impacts on enjoyment and way of life. There will be no respite from noise or vibration for local residents. This sustained disturbance can have adverse effects on the physical and mental health and well-being. Soundproofing is suggested by KiwiRail sometimes if assessed as necessary. If noise modelling is deemed sufficient to determine the height of walls and for KiwiRail to state preferred limit, it should be sufficient to determine which homes are likely to require soundproofing. KiwiRail cited soundproofing of new homes requirements in the Melbourne District Council, cited soundproofing of new homes, new home requirements to the Melbourne District Council in November 2020. By default, these requirements should be applied to existing homes affected by this designation. Whilst they're not new, the proposed rail yard is, and it is creating an environment the homes were not designed for. Therefore, all soundproofing mitigation measures should be carried out on those homes prior to the start of any construction. The use of walls is cited as mitigation. However, noting the noise specialist comments, he pointed out that these are only effective for location within 50 to 100 metres from the walls. This means that there is unlikely to be any mitigation that will be effective for those properties further away, even though the noise footprint will significantly impact on the environment. No projections are given to factor in the effects of prevailing winds on noise levels, which raises the question regarding the notification of residents being limited to 1 kilometre. Should this have included a wider area to be notified to achieve compliance with regards to community consultation efforts? And should this wider area be included when assessing the environmental and social impacts on the area as a whole?
So just interject there. So the key points are the noise walls are ineffective at the distance of our house. There's just an error on that slide. The red circle should be up in the blue area to the top of the screen as per the previous slides. It should also be noted that the model does not include wind effect. So when we live in the house, you hear the train go past on a night when the prevailing wind's not blowing, you sign up to the Manawatu. That doesn't happen often. That's why we've got windmills. But the key point is that noise travels a lot more strongly in the prevailing wind. The first slide that we had showed a blue arrow, which you might remember, basically comes right across, the prevailing wind comes across the freight hub and heads across all of the housing in that area. So what does it mean for us? It means a loud conversation outside your window equivalent. So for us that means no more listening to birds in bed, I suspect, on a Saturday and Sunday morning, which is less than ideal for us. For other people in the area, it's significantly worse than that. The people that are further out, are they even aware of what the noise effects will be for them? And therefore, should they have been talked to?
I guess to give you an idea, I had a play with noise measurement and turned on the extractor fan in the kitchen. On its lowest setting, it was around 30, 35 decibels. On its second setting, it was 45. That's pretty loud. And to have that outside when typically that frosty morning over there with my kids outside on the lawn, you'd be lucky to hit 20 decibels.
Taking a reading outside. Take your phone, take some apps outside. It's not scientific devices, granted, no. But what we had available, you look at that, you look just at the charts.
Putting it in
what are we in for? What are we actually in for? Shutting the windows and going inside with a rural lifestyle property. not really why we went there. Is it actually a suggestion that works for people in a rural environment?
So we also want to note that the requirement, the NOR, stated that residual noise and vibration should be acceptable in this environment, following on what we've just discussed. What context does that actually refer to? What is the environment it thinks is being assessed? Assessments based on the effect of the environment in, say, the northeast industrial zone or urban context would be flawed, as this site sits in a rural zone and encroaches on existing residential areas. The attitude or expectation from KiwiRail that rural residents should just accept disturbance, closed window level, vented fresh air, and disruption to those outdoor activities, loss of peace and quiet, and enjoyment of their country environment, due to the significant impacts and changes that this development would result in, is not acceptable. As Joe mentioned, this was typified in a response we received from a senior KiwiRail representative during a public consultation. When the effects of noise on the rural amenity was questioned, the response was, stay inside with your windows and doors closed.
Yeah, right. A fair amount of frustration in it, I'm sure, but not what we wanted to hear.
So, with that, no apparent consideration has been given to the long and short-term effects of sustained noise and vibration disturbance on health, such as the loss of sleep, fatigue, leading to anxiety, learning problems, and behavioural issues. There are a number of academic papers available that have researched the effect of sleep disturbance, both in the human factors field and effects on shift workers in industry and medical settings, that have found numerous negative effects on both physical and mental health. This is not addressed and not even acknowledged in the social effects assessment. Mitigation proposals suggested during community consultations, such as move away from the area or stay inside, windows and doors closed, was not a practical or be helpful. While these might suit KiwiRail, these are not acceptable responses for residents. Noting the current financial and housing issues facing the Manawatu District and wider national area with respect to the issues associated with the availability and affordability of both rental properties and those for sale.
Pick up a property press, try and find a property at the value of 7 Hauraki Road in the Manawatu region at the moment.
Or even
see if I can move.
Or even like for like.
So that Hauraki Road is a cul-de-sac sort of bespoke development with superior rural residential housing. I think we've been down there.
We're the poor people at the end of the street. Yeah. We don't have electric gates. Or
some of the others did not.
We got gates a year ago. We felt very special.
Yeah, I was showing those not familiar with the Manawatu, the Stony Creek and Hauraki Road area, which is sort of quite a new development for the Manawatu in terms of rural residential development.
So recently down Tūtaki Road there was Tula Lane, which has just been subdivided and has about six homes on it and probably approximately half acre. So park-like grounds, I think you would describe it. And that is happening more and more down Stony Creek and Tūtaki Road. Mm-hmm. You're getting more and more of those homes built there because the lifestyle blocks are getting, they were land banks and people are subdividing them more.
Are they in a identified rural residential area under the district plan? Or?
Interestingly enough, there's some strange limits or designations around the area. Whilst we are considered to be within the city boundaries, where we are, we don't get rubbish pickup, we don't get recycling, we have our own water supply and our own septic system. Literally 100 yards up the road from the Hauraki Road is they get rubbish pickup, recycling.
It's funny because the trucks drive up our street.
They drive up our street to turn around and go back.
To turn around and go back.
And we're not alone in this. It happens on a number of the streets where...
Those things. But yeah, that's odd.
In the city, but not part of the city, so, if that makes sense.
So there's a few things that are odd around the area. Halfway down Ōrākei Road, there's an old Manawatū line that's running around through the middle of the property, so you get different rules for different parts of the subdivision even.
There's a what? There's
what? Manawatū District Council line, an old line that used to run through there, which is a bit, I understand it's being looped through, it might have even been looped through now. But one half of it was in North City Council. Then there was a first roundabout on
our that's regarding our road. So half of the road is still considered council, and the other half of the road is city's responsibility. So recently, half of the road was resealed, whilst the other half was not. We don't even pretend to try and understand things like that. So back to me speaking again. With respect to noise and vibrations, I'll just refer you to our points that we made in our submission, please. We brought up a number of points. And in addition to that, the recent Appendix A of the Council's Section 42 Tech Report, which suggested noise limitations, hours of operations, we support that fully, that those constraints are placed around the hub should it be granted this designation to provide some protection for the residents and the people of the area, because at the moment there's nothing. Following on from that, the landscape, visual and ecological, I refer to the recent council report that was carried out, particularly on ecological assessment. They found aspects of the Kiwi Rail assessments flawed, incomplete, and inaccurate, as did we, which can be seen in our submission again. Stormwater and flooding, contaminated land, and water protection. This is my bag. We've raised this issue of the proximity of a proposed rail yard to the council bore water before. Apart from the preliminary site inspection report, as discussed in our submission, no further assessments have been carried out by Kiwi Rail. The council cites that this is either out of the scope of their report for an expertise in stormwater and flooding assessment, or expects that this would be appropriately protected during the infrastructure asset assessment. The lack of investigation, analysis, and assessment of the risk to the water supply is surprising and extremely worrying. This is a glaring omission on the part of both Kiwi Rail and the council, and potentially places a valuable, irreplaceable water source at risk. To be clear, we're not talking about runoff or surface water, also called groundwater, which may cause a bit of confusion. We're talking about the bore water, water taken from beneath the surface. The city bore is located at the corner of Roberts Line and Railway Road, immediately adjacent to the proposed site. This was recently refurbished at a cost of over $920,000 to meet the requirements of the expanding northeast quadrant. This bore supplies on any given day up to one third of the city's water supply, more in times of greater demand such as summer. The water table for this bore, although recently drilled to depth of over 250 metres, was found at a higher level than expected, with water levels at around 50 metres. In addition, there are a further 15 smaller, shallow bores, that is less than 50 metres in depth, that dot the site, indicating higher water tables throughout the area. Kiwi Rail states that these will be capped and monitored. However, they are potential contamination points, not only due to the extensive earthworks required, but also operational contaminants.
And also the testing is obviously reactive. Probably one other point is the subdivision has an old farm bore for the whole subdivision, which drove the area of interest, which we didn't mention before. But sorry.
You're encroaching on my speech.
I am. I'll get told off later.
as you said, monitoring is not mitigation. On a scale such as this, once contamination is found, it's too late. The only means to remove the contamination is by removing the source. Do you think QRail is going to pick up and leave? Potential rail contaminants may include, but are not limited to, oils, lubricants, other petroleum products, cleaning and degreasing agents, solvents, hydrocarbons, plastics, and maintenance activities, other chemicals, fertilizers, herbicides, pesticides, timber products, treated and untreated, and heavy metals from freight movements and cargo. Notwithstanding the risk posed by an incident involving bulk fuel storage on site. Therefore, questions around the protection of the city and local area groundwater supply remained unresolved. There has been to date no hydrogeological assessment of this area or environs. Online research has shown that only one recent thesis on the hydrogeological characteristics of the Manawatu Plains only. This does not provide the necessary information required to assess the risk to the water supply, and this was confirmed by inquiry to MASI. A full assessment is required to obtain a comprehensive understanding of the type of water supply, artesian or reservoir, the location of feeds to the supply, and what influences this, flows, the geology and effects of flooding on the water table. That is, in the event of flooding, will the increase in water levels above and below ground increase the risk of contaminants entering the water bore catchment area? I don't profess to be an expert on water. However, a small amount of research has shown me the importance of this investigation. This affects not only the city bore, but potentially anyone in the area who uses bore water beyond the designation. This is not something that should be left to the consenting stage. That's too late. Whilst time has been spent on forecasting freight demand, economic benefits, noise assessments, traffic and water runoff, nothing has been done to assess the risk to the entire city's water supply. This appears to be contrary to all policy relating to the protection of water sources. We should be safeguarding our water sources for our children and generations to come. Our water is far too precious to be left as an afterthought. It's protection left to mitigation measures. We have a right to clean water. It should not be put at risk by business. Our health and environment should not be put at risk by big business. We ask the panel that no decision should be made in this designation until the risk to the city bore water supply and the greater hydrogeological landscape of the area is comprehensively assessed and understood, requiring specialist investigation analysis with a report subject to peer review by both domestic and foreign specialists. Social impact. Has socially impacted me, obviously. Social impact assessments have been found lacking on multiple levels. Generalisations and assumptions were made, showing lack of understanding of the environment and people. This review was also shared by the Palmerston North Council reviewer in the Section 42 Tech Evidence Report, resulting in the severity of the adverse impacts on the community being understated. The environment, the character and sense of place of the community environments will fundamentally change, and not in a good way. There's additional evidence of attitudes, opinions and reports that make broad assumptions regarding the community of Bunthorpe and the extent of the area deemed affected. For example, when the arbitrarily assigned 1 kilometre limit of notification. Examples of this dismissive and flippant attitude towards residents can be seen in various statements, both KeyRail social and economic reports suggesting that the rail yard would mean employment for the people of Bunnythorpe, implying that there's an expectation or belief that the people who live in rural areas are in need of work. That's insulting and patronising. Bunnythorpe and its environment are home to a number of people with different backgrounds and skill sets. We have medical professionals, aviation professionals, tradesmen, business owners, education professionals, farmers, including the stay-at-home mums and dads and carers. We choose to live here because of what it is, a quiet rural area, not because of what we do. Comments along noted during public consultations along the lines of, don't like it, leave. The other presumption stated in KiwiRail social assessment is that homeowners will easily find other properties as they're already in the market. And the assumption that finding another rental is equally as easy shows the utter lack of any real understanding of the housing and rental market and the challenges associated with finding a home that is suitable, affordable, in a similar area. Those residents that are renting are even more disadvantaged. Whilst property owners may receive payment for the property, tenants will be left with nothing but a notice to vacate, and the financial cost associated with not only moving, but may also include increased travel expenses and childcare, the difficulty of finding a pet-friendly rental, the loss of support network of family and friends due to the need to move, but also the potential increase in rent. For example, rentals in March 21 for Bunnythorpe averaged around $320 per week, whereas Palmerston North was $440. All businesses have social responsibility to the people and their environment they're in which they operate. We believe it's not only socially irresponsible, but reprehensible to evict people during the housing crisis and economic downturn. The predetermination of this site has influenced every aspect of this process. The MCA was nothing more than a tick-the-box exercise, not to determine the best site, but to find flaws with any other site in the area with a view to this particular site selection. Notably, even the concept plan produced coincidentally fits or overlays into the proposed Northeast Industrial Zone site, almost as if it were made for it. The adverse effects on the Bunnythorpe community and wider area have been vastly understated, with public concerns either marginalised or ignored, in particular those adverse effects on mental and physical health. This notice of requirement will sever the community. Noise and vibration will increase due to the rail movements and activities and increased diverted road traffic and heavy freight volumes. The proposal essentially turns the village into a big intersection. The intentional displacement of persons from homes for business and profit purposes during a housing crisis and economic downturn is just wrong. There are arguments that this will reduce heavy traffic on roads. As I stated, this is inaccurate and untrue. Traffic will increase in the area. Distribution networks are still required. Therefore, KiwiRail's increase in freight will result in an increase in distribution traffic from the hub, increasing road traffic, increasing risk to safety of the people in the community, increasing the effects of noise and vibration on those people who live in that community. So, request that the panel give consideration to these comments regarding the social impact assessment, or lack thereof. Finally, almost there, economic. As noted in both the KiwiRail assessment and the council assessment of that report, the economic benefits have been overstated. Whilst KiwiRail may realise some of its goals, the benefits stated for Bunnythorpe and Manawatu cannot be substantiated. In some cases, these statements have been either false or misleading. So I refer to the notice of requirement response to the council request dated 7th of May. Regarding employment figures, the same number of people, 350, from the current site are expected to be transferred to and employed in the new site. All other estimated job opportunities are based solely on existing freight partners and the expectation that they will increase employee numbers. KiwiRail cites the creation of construction jobs as a benefit. These are highly unlikely to be attributable to KiwiRail, as those peers would likely already be employed in various infrastructure projects in the Manawatu through the replacement gauge road construction, subsequent upgrades to Saddle Road and Whaitoa Track, and as yet the non-existent Brigmode. Works at both Ahakia Air Base and Linton Camp included, and the expansion of residential areas between Calvin Grove and Whakaronga and Bunnyport. Railyard employment figures quoted are based on current freight partners' employee numbers and forecasted figures. As I said, these are solely reliant on existing partners expanding operations or new partners taking up options on the site. An increase in freight demand, rail or otherwise, comes with an increase in road freight. The employment benefits cited are misleading, as they're not job opportunities created as a result of food rail, but job opportunities that would occur in spite of Kiwi Rail. Also misleading are the benefits associated with the belief that Kiwi Rail intend to release the current rail yard to Palmerston North Council for repurposing. However, despite the Council's belief they'll get the land from the current site for Kiwi Rail operations, this is potentially nothing more than a pipe dream. As identified in the Kiwi Rail Economic Report, the land is likely to be unsuited for residential use due to contamination and only fit for commercial purposes, adding to Tremaine Ave connection roads. Significantly, it notes that no decision as to the designation of this land has been decided. Submissions were made relating to the impact on property prices. Kiwi Rail legal team response that decisions should not be made based on people's fears, real or perceived, that may never be realised. If this approach is valid, then an NRR should not be submitted on the basis of projected forecast for freight demand. This is a perceived forecast, which might never be realised. So, request again, panel, give consideration to comments made in our submission regarding the economic benefits or lack thereof and those raised in the Council's response. Noting that economic benefits ascribed to Palmerston North and environs as a result of the Kiwi Rail Yard are likely to be vastly overstated or not directly attributable to Kiwi Rail. Request that the panel reconsider the validity of the notice of requirement from Kiwi Rail based on their stated business case and with reference to the significantly reduced or unrealised economic benefits. Also, due to the dubious reliability of these benefits, request the lapse period is either maintained at 5 years or extended only to the maximum 10 as recommended by the Council Planners, not the 15 as requested by Kiwi Rail. So in conclusion, I've finally got there. We oppose this NOR. We question its legality with respect to the size and scope of the designation, its location, the large number of anomalies noted in the site selection process, and due to the significant adverse impacts on the people and the environment. Kiwi Rail has overestimated forecasted demand and the economic benefits of this project, whilst repeatedly understating, marginalising or disregarding the adverse impacts on the environment, risks to our natural resources, infrastructure and people. So thank you for your time and your patience.
Thank you very much.
And I'm done.
And I guess from myself, that is a rural area. That is a rural property that we worked an awful long time to get into. I know we're not the only ones in the area that have done much the same, but I know there's people in the area that are less well off than we are who are going to find it a hell of a lot harder to deal with than we are. So whilst we're lucky, we've done it for the community that we're a part of, and we've been active in that community for a while, so we know the people in the area, we know the hardships that they're looking at. And my plea is, why should we accept this potentially uphill battle if the NOR is accepted? Why should we, having looked for a rural property and others like us in the area looking for rural properties, why should we accept a doors and windows closed policy when we're there to live outside, not inside?
Thank you very much. It's a very comprehensive submission. I might kick off the questions. You emphasise aspects of the MCA process. And I just want to tease out some questions because I don't have all the information about that. First of all, in relation to the provincial fund arrangement, was that tagged to a site or to a project?
When this was proposed, yes, I did a Google search. And the first thing I found with regards to the growth fund, you can have a copy of this, was a partially redacted document online, which in the first proposal paragraph said the acquisition of approximately 65 hectares of land in the northeast industrial zone in redacted Palmerston North.
So that's on the slide showing.
This document didn't stay online long. This was removed and replaced with another version which had that first statement redacted, where the 65 hectares was removed.
Okay.
However, on the second page, second paragraph.
Right. You can see it up there as well, piloted on the second page at the bottom right.
So are these application documents?
These are the application documents for the Provincial Growth Fund, yes. Okay,
so you're talking pre-2018?
Right, but in terms of the government's funding, is it tagged to a project or to a site?
The funding would be
the growth fund?
Yeah.
So this was KiwiRail Palmerston North Regional Economic Growth Fund Project PGF application. So this was from KiwiRail.
It's a project application.
Yeah, no, but do you know what the government's funding conditions are? Is it tagged to a project or to a or a site?
I believe this was the $40 million that they received that was announced for the purchase of land for this project.
Right.
We'll give you a copy of the document.
Yeah, so I just have a question.
For the background, it specifically mentions it's...
Is a copy useful?
Hmm?
Is a copy of this useful?
That's useful, but... Is the answer to my question you don't know what the conditions to the funding were?
We couldn't find those documents.
Hmm.
It's pretty hard finding those documents.
A lot of the documents aren't readily available or easy for us to find. So, and
right.
It's a bit time constrained with kids and two jobs.
Yeah. No, that's not a criticism. I'm just curious whether you knew that information.
Do you have additional documents? This could be the one that you're looking for, that is in response to the Growth Fund application. Where Cabinet have approved, in principle, the allocation of this $40 million. Would that be the one that you're looking for?
Well, provide us with those documents.
Yep.
But
definitely. You can have
normally there would be some form of instrument from the Crown that says, here's your funding arrangements and these are the requirements. My reading of the MCA analysis process was that option, you've emphasised option 5, Longburn, and option 3.
Yep.
My reading of that is that they were relatively similarly graded at the initial phases.
So,
is that correct?
So if you've read the summary report, that contradicts aspects of the actual MCA reports that were carried out in workshops 1 and 2. So I have some time on my hands. I read all those. So what happened, if you can find that slide. So you had, near Longburn, there were 3 sites.
Yeah.
5, 6 and 7. It's not very easy to see on there because we've made
it very
small.
5 to 8?
So options 5 and 6 were both on the western side of the railway.
Yeah.
Option 5 was at the upper end, option 6. Interestingly, these two were combined for the purpose of workshop 3 and were renamed option 5, whereas options 1 through to 4 were given 1A, 1B, 2B, we're doubled up on. The constraints identified in option 5 were then attributed to option 6. The constraints identified in option 6 were then attributed to the new option 5. It's a bit confusing. It confused me at the time. It took me a while to work my way through it. But what has happened essentially, if I use my hands, you had option 5 here, had a constraint up the top, had option 6 here, had a constraint down here. So I believe the intention was to combine these two to remove those two constraints. And they relabeled it option 5. This actually resulted in a lot of confusion. Obviously, you yourself are wondering what's happened with it, but also noted in the recent council assessment that they spoke about constraints affecting option 5 that were actually in the original option 6. So it even caused confusion at this stage of the game. I did go through those, obviously with fine-tooth comb, and found that between the workshops, decisions were made and things were moved around that didn't seem to marry up, which was with information that was then presented in the final final summary. So if you do read the final summary, it is a great overview, but there are parts of it that are inaccurate. And I believe this is not intentional, but due primarily to the process being complicated, to the changing of criteria, to the changing and renaming of the site. You know, perhaps it would have been better to call it option 5.5 rather than option 5. Just things like that. It's
Well, some of that might just be the exploration of options and refining the thinking through a process. So it may also point to a lack of rigidity, which might be a good thing in terms of your assessment. But my question is, if you look at page 53 of the summary report, what emerges in relation to option 5 is an indication of concern around the proximity of that option to future residential areas and existing rural residential land use.
So that would
My question is, was that future residential area what they call, I may be wrong about this, Kaka Tangiata, which is the Western Residential Development Node?
Yep. I believe that's what it is referring to. However, that is still in the consultation stage. The proximity to that is given weighting, yet the proximity of this site to Bunnythorpe and other environs and the potential residential explosion around that area is not given the same consideration. Just recently, 85 hectares has gone up for sale between Calvin Grove Road and Napier Road for residential development. So that is just down the road from us.
Would that be as close that to option 3 as option 5 would be to Kaka Tangiata?
Without Google Maps to measure it out, I wouldn't be able to tell you. What is interesting about that proposed residential site is that it is on known flood-prone area. It's a known flood-prone area.
Which one is? Whakarongo or Kaka Tangiata?
I don't want to mangle the name because that would be insulting. The proposed western residential area is on flood-prone area.
Hmm.
It's marked on all council plans as being flood-prone, yet there's a proposal there to put housing on it. which baffles me, particularly as that's downstream, or the Mangoni stream runs through there. That's the same stream that Kiri Rail intend to put the overflow from their retention ponds, their settlement ponds into. So the potential for flooding downstream in that particular area also increases. By stating that the potential residential area there is a valid point, the consideration should also be given to potential residential areas in the Bunnythorpe-Whakaronga area. I mean, Council mentions, and Kiri Rail mentions, that there's potential for housing development in Bunnythorpe with the approval of the designation. So if, on one hand, you're discounting an area because of a residential, a potential residential area, and on the other hand, you're saying that it doesn't matter, or that, oh no, you can build right next to it because it's a great thing. You know, you can walk to work.
What I might do is ask Mr. Lloyd, in terms of noisescape and footprint, whether he agrees that given the strategic planning of the city, option 3 scores better than option 5, because you've questioned that scoring and it's a significant externality. So I might explore that.
We spoke to the acoustic specialist at one of the public hearings. He stated that option 3 scored the worst. It was the worst place acoustically.
Yeah, he did say that.
If you go into the nitty-gritty reports, the options in Longbourn scored much better in terms of being more conducive to noise mitigation. However, that was discounted because they said the walls would look ugly. Yet, if you look at this proposal, they're going for walls and bunting and plantings. So again, there's excuses made for one site that are not used on the other site. You know, mitigation, you're going, but because here, and then when we reply it, try to overlay that on another site, they're no longer valid points. There's just too many inconsistencies in how things were assessed that it just makes me uncomfortable.
And just a final observation before I ask any other commissioners if they have questions, and it's really a response to Duane's self-reflection about could we have anticipated this from the planning documents, and I think the fair answer is no. It is a significantly different and larger type of concept than I think anyone would have reasonably envisaged when you purchased the property.
No comments from me. Thank you for the time that you've spent preparing the submission. It obviously has taken a long time and you've done very in-depth analysis, and we appreciate what you've done. Thank you.
I think I owe someone a lot of copies.
Mihi nui, kia kōrua. I'd just like to reiterate the comments from my colleague, and thank you both very much for coming along this morning to present your submission to us in person. I really appreciate the difficult situation you find yourselves in and the uncertainties now that you're facing in terms of the potential impacts on your property and more importantly, your lives as a result of this proposal. So I do really appreciate that. I don't have any specific questions for you, but I also wanted to thank you for the amount of work and effort that's gone into producing such a highly detailed and insightful submission. Thank you. Kia ora.
Good morning. I do actually have one question for you. You mentioned earlier on this morning about potential uphill legal battles should the NOR go ahead. And you've also talked about, if it does go ahead, conditions you would like to see applied to it. Could you just clarify what you meant about those potential uphill legal battles?
Throughout the proposed mitigation, there are a number of proposed mitigations are that a liaison will be appointed. There's no time limits for response around those. There's no feedback loop for those. They're only going to be there for a limited time, then they're gone. So what's a person to do if their noise limits are exceeded? Where do they go? What do they do if they're not getting the response back from Kiwi Rail? What legal options do they have to have someone do something about it when no constraints have been placed around the designation itself? There's those sorts of legal implications. There are also the what happens if it wants to get bigger. Well, we decided there's a part in the business case, which we found, which was also presented to government, which you can have, which mentions further stage plans of increased sidings, increasing rail spurs to other freight partners. Well, who is that going to affect? That's not mentioned in any of this. It's sort of like now we've got our foot in the door. We're going to keep expanding and we're going to keep going out and just absorb more and more of the community, more and more of the environment, because we're here and we can. There's loads. Where can people go? We don't have cash for the legal team. There's no support for that sort of thing.
The others in the area won't either. So the question is, where does that leave them all? So if noise works out to be a bigger problem than we're anticipating, other than legal options, what real option are those people going to have? They'll have to, in a nutshell, band together, I would be picking, and try and push the legal battle, but it'll be uphill after the NOI's signed, obviously.
So there's been quite a lot of dialogue around potential conditions over the time we've been listening to people.
Yeah.
And we have a set of draft conditions from 13th of August last week.
Yeah.
And I think there's a little bit more certainty coming out through those. I don't know if I had a chance to have a look at them at all.
Yes, I did have a look at those. If you take a close look at them, you'll see that a lot of the proposed conditions are very open-ended. For example, the assigning a liaison. It's for a fixed period. There's no SMART objectives in that assignment, you know. Is it measurable, achievable, that sort of thing. There's no timelines no timelines on responses. No, say, 20 days to respond to the complainants, 60 days to get some sort of mitigation in place, 6 months report to the council, Ministry of Health, or horizons on all the complaints received. There's no measurable activities in these mitigations. They look great, and you say, oh, what a fantastic effort you've done suggesting this mitigation, but they're all very open-ended.
Unless it's detailed.
There's very little detail on what that's actually going to mean. I can appoint a liaison, but I might not do anything.
So if that detail was built in, would that assist in allaying some of your concerns?
Potentially. Depends what's in it. Yeah. It would depend on what it would be in relation to. Unfortunately, you're dealing with two analytical people from an engineering background, so.
It's all right, I understand, I'm also an engineer.
There we go.
I like detail.
I didn't go into the mitigation that I'd like to see. probably going, thank God. if you have in our submission, we put a number of things you'd like to see. I'd like to acknowledge that the Palmerston North Council and some of their analysts that have put in their Section 42 reports have suggested some great forms of, or have suggested great recommendations, and some really good forms of mitigation. I'd really like to acknowledge that those people have taken the time to have a look at it and come up with meaningful mitigation methods, as opposed to, well, we could just get someone to talk to them. That's not really helpful.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Is Ms. Tippany here? Would you mind, we have time scheduled for morning tea. Would it be okay if we can break for 15 minutes and have a comfort stop? Do you mind that? Yes. You're all included. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm sorry about the loss of time.
Our apologies for the delay too.
All right, well, we'll break for 15 minutes. Thank you. It's in the process. No, it isn't even at the stage. Thank you.